Blog Talk Radio.
You are tuned in to Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir and Sherry Pang. Stay tuned as we enter the world of the unknown. There is a silent, invisible world that surrounds us all. A world we don't understand. A world that we wish to understand. And on Paranormal Horizons, we're going to explore this and hopefully get some answers. Good evening, everyone. I'm Jason Ophir, as usual. Welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons, here with Sherry Pang. Sherry, how was your week?
Pretty good, Jason. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. You know, every day seems like Groundhog Day, but I'm skeptically optimistic about the future.
That's good.
Working and relaxing and watching a lot of movies and just sitting around with aspirations to get outside more. But now that the weather's turning, I'll probably have to wait till next summer when it gets nice out to do some more outdoor activity.
Well, I haven't been up with the weather, but are we supposed to have rain coming in finally?
I don't know. I imagine it's going to be coming shortly. It's been kind of nice lately, which has been a nice change up here in Portland, Oregon. But hopefully we'll maintain some of our weather, excellent weather, and yeah, but not much going on. And as usual, I've been so busy, I haven't been keeping my pulse on the paranormal, so I'm not exactly sure what's going on there. Have you heard anything?
Not much. I've just been read here and there, and I've been doing a lot of readings, and then I just got back on tour for a couple days, and so. I haven't been really brushed up on the paranormal, but there's always something going on, and I'm excited to hear if anything new comes on. So, but our guest tonight is our returning guest. His name is Ross Allison. He's just a really nice guy, and he's been investigating the paranormal for more than 20 years, and his work has been taking him to all over the continent, from London to Paris to Romania to Rome, Mexico, Scotland, Ireland, Greece, Spain, and many other exotic locations. So last time we had him on the show, we talked about haunted toys. And I did notice that him and David Weatherly has been on our show in the past. I think it was earlier this year. And I believe that he's coming up with a new book called Haunted Churches. So I'm going to ask him about that. But Rush's show is called The Angry Ghost Hunter. Show has been on TLC and Travel Channel, A&E, CNN, ABC, Nightline, ABC Family, CMT, Ghost Hunters, MTV, and the Discovery Channel. So I'm excited to have Russ back and have him put him on.
All righty. Let's get him on right now. Hey, Russ.
Hey,
welcome
guys.
Back to the show. Hey.
Well, it's good to be back.
Thank you for coming on. We appreciate you.
Oh, anytime. You just have to ask.
Thank you. Yeah, I know you're really a busy guy, and just like us, you know, it's like how to schedule everything in. Sometimes you have to wait last minute, but, you know, we make it happen. So I hear that you are writing a book, or did you complete a book about haunted churches?
Oh, it's actually our next book for me and David Weatherly. It's our next project in our series that we're doing. We started a series called Haunted. Our first one was Haunted Toys, and then, of course, just recently came out was Haunted Ships and Lighthouses, and then to follow that, we've got Haunted Churches and a few other ones, Haunted Hotels. So we've got about, I think, 2 to 3 more books coming out for next year, and we'll continue on from there. So, yeah, it's been a fun project and lots of research and travel for us, so, yeah.
I got to ask... In terms of the churches, are there any off the top of your head that you can reveal to us that is extremely haunted out there?
Oh, gosh. To be honest with you, we just started the outline of the book, so I haven't had a chance to dive into any of the stories yet. We're just putting the outline together. So once we get the outline together, then it comes together pretty quickly. But I'm trying to think if there's any ones I can pop to my head right now. But to be honest with you, not right now. I can't think of anything.
That's okay. We'll wait
that.
For the book.
wait for the book. Once we get into the research
book.
And stuff like that, we'll definitely have some stories to share with you guys. I just can't think of anything right now. Like I said, I've just been putting together some ideas just kind of thumbing through some stories out there, but I haven't dug into them to give you the details.
Now,
I always feel like I'm a burst into flames when I walk in a church, so I won't be investing in any church, investigating any churches lately. Sorry, go ahead, Jerry.
No, I hear you.
Ross, are these churches that you're going to be writing about, are these people that have submitted their own stories, or are these something that you and David Weatherly has investigated yourself and is going to write about it?
It's a little bit of all of the above. You know, if we have stories that we've had people come to us and tell us that they have some stories they would love to submit about some of the haunted churches. I believe David has had the chance to investigate a couple haunted churches. One of the churches that I got to investigate, which was in London. So now as we start talking to it, some of them start coming to my mind. It was really cool because it's one of the old churches, one of the oldest churches in London. And when we were doing our investigation there, one of the things that we captured on our recordings was what sounds like, you know, old chanting in the background. So, yeah, so it's a lot of stuff like that we're going to be putting together. We're trying to find, you know, some more unique cases, a lot of stuff that hasn't been published yet. That's one of the things that we focus on with our series is we, you know, throw in some of the most popular haunts that people are more aware of with some new stories. But then, of course, we're always trying to find some locations that are a little more unique. So if any of your listeners have some good stories about some haunted churches, you know, feel free to message me and David Weatherly, and we'd love to see what you got there.
Wow.
Very cool. Now, have you done any lately since we last spoke to you? Any investigations that come into mind?
Oh, my God.
Surprise. It's been a while.
God, I'm trying to think. Yeah, it's been a while, so and I'm pretty active. I'm constantly going out there and doing at least, you know, 2 to 3 investigations a month and traveling all over the place. So, yeah, I've been really active. Trying to think what's the most recent. Like, well, today I just finished up helping out at the Port Gamble conference. So I just got home today and just finished that up, and I did a lecture out there on haunted toys. And, of course, I did my class on paranormal journaling. So me and June, my VP, we actually got to assist in some of the investigation sites, and one of the places we got to investigate was the old morgue down there. So we had that to ourselves, and we had the museum to ourselves as well. So that was kind of fun. So as most recent investigations, those are probably at the top there, but had some pretty exciting investigations actually about a few weeks ago. I had taken a small team to a prison, Bushy Mountain Prison, which was kind of cool. That's in Tennessee. Actually has a lot of history there. And a couple of the guys that I've been working with, they actually had some pretty interesting experiences. One guy actually was in one of the cell blocks, and he was terrified so much by seeing a dark, shadowy figure coming at him that he ran out of there. So there was that, and one of the guys we actually decided to tie to one of the restraining beds in the hospital wing. And he had a situation where he was hearing something coming towards him, and he started screaming. And of course he was tied to the bed, so he couldn't get out of it. So that was pretty interesting.
That sounds like you really like to get into your work when you're tying your teammates to a bed. I'd be like, yeah, no, thank you. Not going to happen.
Yeah, for me, I definitely try to be a little more unique when it comes to the investigation styles. I try to focus a lot on triggers, reenactments type of stuff to see if that could actually trigger some phenomena. So when I found out that, you know, in the hospital wing where they used to, you know, they had to restrain the prisoners for a couple reasons, for safety for the nurses when they have to come in and give them shots or whatever they need to do. And also in case these guys are, you know, suicidal, you know, they want to prevent them from trying to commit suicide, so they restrain them. And I just thought, gosh, you know, that's got to be a pretty intense feeling to be restrained. And there had been some reports of hauntings in that wing as well. So I thought, well, let's see what happens. You know, sometimes you get the best evidence when you make yourself vulnerable. And so, of course, you know, in these situations, these guys put themselves in situations where they were very vulnerable. And it seemed to pan out. They actually had some pretty interesting experiences.
So,
have
Sherry,
you run across anything that's demonic? Or gins?
Have I come across anything that's been demonic?
Mm-hmm.
I think my most demonic is the one that I shared with you guys last time, I believe, when I did the St. Louis University story where the exorcist case took place. I think for me, I did share that story with you guys last time, right? If you remember?
I don't remember, to be honest with you.
I
vaguely recall it.
Well,
it's been a while, Rob.
maybe we need a recap.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I basically, it's one of my most popular stories, encounters that I've had that a lot of people love to hear it. So I'm more than happy to share it again. But I actually lecture at colleges and universities. And so when I do my lecture, I take the students on a ghost hunt on their campus, just, you know, kind of looking around for what they claim to be haunted. And I was taken to St. Louis University. And St. Louis University is actually where the true exorcist case took place. And I actually got to investigate the location where the young boy had actually been kept for a short time. And if you're not familiar with the story, it is actually about a little boy, not a little girl named Linda Blair. So what happens is this room or this area that once belonged to the church has now been turned over to the campus, is completely abandoned now. And so, you know, I'm kind of going around through the whole fourth floor investigating all these different rooms. But to my surprise, when I walk into this one room, I find all these dead birds in the room. And what made this interesting is there had all the doors on the fourth floor had been removed because they've had problems with students constantly sneaking up there and scaring each other. So this just made it easier for them to do their rounds and not have to open closed doors and keep the students from hiding from them. But now to walk into this one room and find that it's filled with all these dead birds was kind of odd because I had not come across any dead animals. And again, they have access to the whole fourth floor. But why did they choose to die in this one room? Well, come to find out, this is the room that the boy had stayed in. And what's interesting is, if you've ever done any research on this case, the church believed that they could not perform a full exorcism on the boy inside the church because this could possibly kill him. So they moved him to various secret locations, performing multiple exorcisms on this boy, because the belief is it's not just one demon. It's, you know, a horde of demons, and every time they perform an exorcism, some of them will escape. So they move him to another location. So I'm standing in this room. It's been completely abandoned for, you know, since what, the 40s, 50s, and it's filled with all these dead birds. So I'm a little creeped out and then realizing, you know, oh, yeah, an exorcism has been performed in this room as well. So this is definitely an odd, you know, encounter. Well, one of the things that I do is I give the students some of the basic equipment. And we're all in this room, And within 5 minutes of being in the room, all the equipment starts to go off at the exact same time. I mean, the temperature is starting to drop. And I can feel it physically getting colder and colder. And I'm expecting, you know, hopefully I'll see my breath anytime soon. Well, temperature's dropping, the EMF detector's going off like crazy, and there's no power up there because this whole fourth floor has been abandoned, so there's nothing. And the compass is spinning around and around and around, and it will not stop. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is really happening. So, you know, of course, as a paranormal investigator, you want to document this. You want to prove that we're really experiencing this phenomena. So I quickly switch my camera over to video, and I start filming everything that's going on. And I'm, you know, getting the students, I'm getting the equipment, and it starts to slow down a little bit. And I figure, okay, before it completely stops, I want to try for EVP, electronic voice phenomena. So I start asking questions into the air. And I get to the part where I'd ask the question, can you tell me whose room this is? And there's about 12 seconds of silence. And then I start to hear crying to the left of me. And I turn, and I realize that a couple of female students have started to cry because they're so terrified being in this room with everything that's going on. So I realize, okay, they're uncomfortable. And I'm going to be honest, I'm a little uncomfortable too because I don't have my normal team with me. This is just college students. This is their first outing. So I realize, okay, we don't know what we're up against. I'm going to have to call it and move on to another location. Because for me, it's safety first for everybody. So I decided to wrap it up. But I was hoping that after the ghost hunt with the students, I could go back later and do my own little investigation. But I didn't get a chance that night to continue with that investigation. But after I finished my lecture tour, I finally had a chance to sit down and listen to and watch these videos that I collected at all the campuses. And I got to that video. And I got to the part in the video where I'd asked, can you tell me whose room this is? Now, of course, I got two responses. And the first response, and I'm going to edit this because I don't want to offend anybody, but it basically says, F you. And right after that, it says, it's mine. So that is probably one of the most interesting experiences for me.
I would have stayed as far away from that room as possible. I mean, and that kind of brings up the question, I mean, what are the risks? I know that with the ghost shows, everything is super popular. Everybody wants to be a ghost hunter. And I can only imagine people going out, you know, basing their knowledge on what they see on TV and running into some pretty nasty paranormal situations and not knowing what to do. Or we've talked to lots of people about getting attachments. And, you know, I used to do ghost investigations, but I finally got to a point where I asked myself, was it really worth it? And to me, it's not. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a skeptic by nature. I question everything. But, you know, even if there's an infinitesimal chance that, you know, something evil is out there, I don't want to take that chance. You know, but
no,
I imagine there's a lot of
people. I definitely hear you.
Yeah, I imagine there's a lot of people. Do you run in to talk to people, or have people called you and said they've had an issue, you know, because they went ghost hunting or, you know, somewhere and they felt like they had an attachment?
Well, I get a lot of questions asked, you know, like how do you protect yourself when you're going to go into situations like that? And for me, I think what has protected me all these years is I carry a level of respect. When you don't know what you're dealing with, you don't want to go in and, you know, torment or, you know, basically try to, and I hate to say it, piss off, you know, whatever you're trying to communicate with. Because when you go to that level, you're asking for trouble. But if you're going to go in and be respectful to the property and to whatever could be on the property, then I feel that you're not a threat to them. And they would probably, if they're in the mood, communicate to you. So for me, it's all about being respectful. Now, I'm not a religious person, so, you know, I don't carry a crucifix or holy water with me. But I have to say, in all the years that I've been doing this, I haven't, you know, run into any other trouble, you know, especially anything following me home. Because another thing that I would do before I leave the property is I stand outside right on the property line and I just thank them. I say, you know, thank you for allowing me to be in your space. I hope you took the time to communicate to me. If so, I will be more than happy to respond if I get a chance. And this is where you belong. And then, you know, I leave it at that. But I do have to express that, you know, there's a lot of cases where there's a lot of positive energy out there, and there's also those few occasions when you can come across that negative energy as well.
And that makes perfect sense. I mean, everything's like positive and negative in the duality of everything. You know, mm-hmm. It just makes sense that there would be negative energy and positive energy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now,
yeah,
we do have a caller. Are you?
Are
you?
Like you said, challenge him. It's just going to make him more mad, and they're going to try and have to prove
right.
their point.
And why would you want to put yourself in that situation? You know, are you just, you know, trying to prove, oh, yeah, there's something out there, but you're also going to put yourself in danger. You know, it's like, are you going to walk into a cage with a man-hungry lion and say, okay, come on, prove you're here. I don't believe you. You know, it's ridiculous that people would put themselves in that kind of danger.
Like when you get pulled over by a cop, are you going to taunt the police officer?
No, come on.
Just look at it that way.
Uh-huh.
Now, are you open to taking questions from callers? We do have a caller.
Yeah, definitely.
Sure. All right. Caller, you're live on Paranormal Horizons. Who's this?
Hey, it's Tim. How are you doing, Jason?
Tim, what's happening?
Hi, Tim.
Hey, Sherry, long time. I still listen to you guys quite a bit. I just laying here in bed right now listening, and how fascinating. I too am not a religious person, and even if I was going into some type of paranormal research, I wouldn't carry crosses and holy water because I really don't think they have any effect over what we're discussing. One thing I am curious about, would you contemplate even taking maybe some type of media device like a Ouija board or something like that to like where you were investigating with the college students? Would that be a device that might be practical, or what is your thoughts on that? That's what I would like to ask.
Oh, the Ouija board question. you know, it's a tough one because I know the paranormal world is very split when it comes to the Ouija board. I know a lot of people that use Ouija boards to try and communicate with the other side, and there's a lot of people that will avoid them because they claim that they open the gates to hell. I think, you know, me personally, it all comes down to intent. You know, when you're using a device like that, it's no different than using a pendulum or using dowsing rods or even, you know, trying to do an EVP session. You know, it's all about your intent. You're trying to communicate with the other side. The simple, you know, what is it, a cardboard board isn't going to, you know, be any different than those kind of practices. But here's what I believe could be possibly happening. And again, it's all about keeping an open mind. But I think tools like Ouija boards, pendulums, dowsing rods, I think they are more of a tool that allows a person to open their own psychic channel. I don't necessarily think that it is a spirit that's actually trying to communicate to you. Because if you're using these tools, you're kind of doing the same thing that a psychic would, you know, to go into some sort of trance and try to reach out to the other side. And so that could explain in a lot of cases when people use those devices, they are able to get the correct answers that they wouldn't have known because it's actually coming to them psychically rather than from the other side. But again, that's just something that I think could be possibly happening.
I see. And, you know, when you were explaining the story, when you were going through the story, the only thing I could think of was that movie called 1408. Because, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that movie, 1408?
We've only just begun.
Yes, we've only just begun by the Carpenters. It's classic. But when you were discussing that, it was just amazing how I could think about, you know, something like that situation, especially with the students and everything. It must have been, I mean, the hairs on the back of my neck standing up. So I know it must have been a situation that you'll never forget. But will you actually try to go back and visit this place again with the more advanced technology that we have today for evaluating the presence within the hospital you were talking about?
Oh, yeah, definitely. In fact, I had the opportunity to go back a couple other times when I went back for when they had me back for another lecture. And it's interesting, too, because this is where the story gets even more in depth. Because the first time I had gone there, again, the whole fourth floor was abandoned. Now, a few years later, they have me back. And now, since then, they've remodeled the fourth floor. So I'm trying to go by memory as to where that room was. And the funny thing is, you know, as I'm trying, you know, to recall where this room was, come to find out, they never touched that room. They remodeled everything up there except the area where that little room is. They did not want to touch it. So here we are. We're granted access back to this room. Now, the only way to get to this room now, since they've remodeled the whole fourth floor, is you actually have to take this old staircase up to that level, and then you have access to a couple rooms. There's the one room where the boy had stayed in, and then there's also these two open areas where it leads to the rafters, to the roof area, the attic space, I would call it. So the first time I go back, I'm excited. We found out that this room is still there. It hasn't been touched. But security is now more terrified of the room. Because since they did all those renovations, there's been more activity around that room. And so security in the past have actually stored their bikes up in this room. And then they had to stop doing that because when they'd come back to get their bikes, the chains would be ripped off the bikes, the handlebars would be bent around, the seat would be turned around. And it was terrifying them. So they stopped using the room. And so we had the room for the night. Now, the first time we go up there, I get a chance to explore a little bit more. So I'm up in the attic space, which is right next to that room, and I'm filming, you know, with a infrared camera, and it's just me and a couple other students. And we hear this noise, and we turn, and sure enough, I can see with the naked eye what looks like a dark shadow figure standing next to the doorway that leads out back to the room. Like it had stepped out of the room and was looking through the doorway to see what the hell we're doing. And I'm just like, I'm frozen. I'm looking at this, and I'm like, oh, my God, do you see this? Do you see this? And the other two students are like, yes, we can see it. We can see it. So as I go to switch my camera on to film what I'm seeing, it fades away. So later, I decide to set up an audio recorder in the room for overnight, and I was going to pick it up in the morning. So I leave the audio recorder in the room, and I basically come back the next morning, and nothing has been disturbed. It looks, you know, normal. The recorder had ran its, you know, full till the batteries ran out. So I finally get home and I start listening to the recordings. And to my surprise, throughout the whole night, and this is probably from after we finished my lecture in the ghost hunt, I set up the recorder probably about midnight and then got back there around 9 o'clock in the morning. So the recorder probably ran at least until about 6 o'clock in the morning. So throughout that whole time, I can hear what sounds like somebody walking up there. I hear doors opening and closing. And then I hear what sounds like a train coming into the depot. And this is the oddest thing. It literally sounds like a train is coming up to the depot. And during this sound of this little chugging noise and this, you know, the on the tracks, that metal noise on the tracks, you can hear what sounds like a woman pounding on a door screaming, "Let me out, let me out." And I was just floored by this. I was just like, oh, my God. Now, you know, just to try and debunk, you know, making sure no one was messing around with the recorder during this whole time, one of the things that I realized is the only way to get to that room is to go up those that old staircase. And it's such an old staircase that you, as soon as you step on the steps, it's making loud wood creaking noises. And you can hear in the recorder, when I turn on the recorder and when we leave, you can hear us going down the stairs. And then, of course, you know, there's no other sounds of somebody coming up the stairs to mess around with the recorder. But I'm capturing all this amazing audio in that one room. Can't explain it. Of course, I submitted it to the students that were in charge of the event, and they did let me know that back in the day there was a train depot near that area. Not sure why I captured that. You know, it sounds like a train, but just definitely some of the interesting things that you come across when you do these investigations.
You want to go spend the night there, Tim?
Oh, man, you know I do. You know, I used to live right there in Snohomish, Snoqualmie, Everett, South Prairie, Bonnie Lake. I worked in Everett. I think where you're talking about has to be somewhere in that area there.
I'm talking about is actually in St. Louis.
Oh, St. Louis. Oh, St. Louis.
St.
Yeah,
Louis University, yeah.
I worked down there, too. Well, Columbia. It wasn't too far away. I would love to hear these recordings. If you ever back onto Paranormal Horizons, which I feel very strongly, I'm sure that Jason and Sherry would have you back on there, would we be able to hear these recordings maybe sometime in the future? Do you keep those?
Definitely. I'd be more happy.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. Well, Ross, I do appreciate you letting me come on and ask you a few questions and to get to talk to you. I'm excited to definitely get a hold of your book. And once again, it's always a privilege to be able to be asking questions with the people that I love here at Paranormal Horizons. Thank you again, Mr. Ross.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Tim.
Me out. Yep, thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
Very cool. Thanks for calling in, Tim. So, I know that we talked about haunted dolls before, and I kind of wanted to just spend a brief moment on that. Have you had anything lately since the last time we talked to you? Have you encountered any other haunted dolls? Anything recently that's come up?
The only thing that was most recent is when me and David Weatherly were out in Canada. We actually were part of a conference going on, a Caribou conference out there. And it was really cool because we got to visit a museum out in that area. And the museum is actually famous because of the Mandy doll. And the Mandy doll is actually in our book, Haunted Toys. So it was another toy that we actually got to visit personally, and hopefully we get to go back. We're trying to set up another visit in April to spend a little more time with her and maybe get a chance to do a little more investigations and see if we can get any of the phenomena that has been tied to the doll. So as for haunted dolls, I think that's the most recent thing. We just got to finally meet one in person.
I noticed, you know, on the topic of haunted dolls that you can go on eBay. I see these YouTube videos about people selling haunted objects and haunted dolls on eBay. And I know it's got to be a scam. Somebody's got to find like an old doll, and then you know, hey, buy this haunted doll for $100. I wonder if any of that's ever real.
One of the things I always tell people when you're looking for haunted objects, you know, especially when you're looking online, you know, there's a lot of scammers out there. They'll just pick up an old doll and say, oh, yeah, it's haunted. Sometimes they'll even tell a great story, you know, with it as well. One of the things I always tell people is when you're looking for these haunted objects and you want to find something that's a little more legit, look at the seller's previous history. If you see that they've been selling haunted dolls, you know, every week, and they probably have about 30, 40 listings of, you know, haunted dolls that they've sold in the past, then you know you're dealing with somebody who's probably making this shit up, just to be honest with you guys.
Why would anybody even want a haunted doll? That's like the last thing I'd want to purchase.
You'd be surprised. Right? A lot of people love this stuff, you know. A lot of people want to check into haunted rooms in hotels. In fact, they say that
that's
the most popular rooms. Yeah,
that is true. I've done that actually. Sherry, do you want a haunted doll? I can go on eBay and buy you a haunted doll for Christmas.
No, that's creepy. No, thank you. You can give me the money instead.
Hey, maybe we can do a prize thing on the show. You know, where we'll just pick a random listener or something, and ship them a haunted doll. Oh, wait, I don't want to be liable for anything.
You have a museum, correct?
What's that?
You have a museum for haunted toys? Oh, my goodness. Can you tell our listeners about it? Where it's located and a little bit about that?
You bet, yes. Definitely, if you're ever in the Seattle area, check out Spooked in Seattle. And you can also check out our website, spookedinseattle.com. We are a ghost tour company, and in fact, we've actually, through a bunch of different media outlets, we've been voted as one of the top tours in America to come check us out. So that's a huge honor, especially being Seattle's one of the youngest cities in America. But we also have a death museum. So I've been putting my big collection of haunted objects and mourning dresses and vintage coffins and tombstones and all kinds of fun stuff into this museum. And I've actually had the opportunity to have quite a few haunted dolls handed off to me from people through donations. And then just some of the things that I've collected from clients who have actually had things happen in their homes and want to get rid of the doll. So yeah, it's a great little place. So if you want to see some real haunted dolls, you can check it out.
So, Ross, as a person that has a museum like that, how were you able to know these items were haunted? You know, what's the chance of somebody, like we were talking about, if somebody just wanted to pawn it off yet and just didn't want to deal with it? How did you know? Did you get any feelings or any experience with these?
I'll be honest with you. There's a good handful of dolls that are probably we haven't had any experiences with. But there have been quite a few of our toys and dolls that have actually have, since we've had them on our property, have let us know that, yes, they are indeed haunted. We have a few dolls that actually will move on their own. We got Mr. Creepy, who's actually a little bit of a celebrity for us. He's gotten a lot of attention. He's been on quite a few shows and radio shows as well. And he's actually a ventriloquist doll that was made by a ventriloquist artist. And he actually goes back to the vaudeville days. And he made this doll in his retirement years. And when he made this doll, he made him and he made a female counterpart. Now, he made these dolls in his likeness and in his wife's likeness. But what makes them extra creepy is the fact that they use their real hair on these dolls. So,
like when they cut their hair, they save the hair, or these are dead people's hairs?
I'm assuming they are dead now, you know. But, I'm not exactly sure what happened in that situation with putting their hair on the dolls, whether it's something that they saved or something they just recently cut and put on the dolls. But, it was definitely interesting. Now, the story is, that the couple did die, and the dolls were sold in an estate sale as a pair. And, of course, a lady who actually has an antique store, she purchased the dolls and put them on display on a shelf behind the register. And they sat there for a long, long time, no issues whatsoever. But unfortunately, they ended up selling her building. So this meant that she had to pack up and move. So she packed up the dolls separately and she put them into storage. Now, of course, she finds her new location and she's got to restock her new store. So she goes in the storage unit. She finds the male figure, but she can't find the female counterpart. But she goes ahead and takes him and she puts him on display in a glass cabinet behind the register. Now, of course, after this, she starts having weird experiences. Like there's somebody constantly standing behind her, you know, looking over her shoulder, breathing down the back of her neck. And it would just constantly give her the chills. In fact, she had noticed right away that his head would be turned in another direction every day. His eyes would be looking in another direction. She said someday she'd come in and find the glass cabinet wide open.
Oh,
and it was freaking her out so much. Yeah, she freaked out so much about this that she actually put him at the back of the store on a bottom shelf so she didn't have to see him on a daily basis. Well, of course, when I come into a lot of these antique stores, I'm looking, you know, for pieces for my death museum, but I also ask them if they have anything that's odd. And so she introduces me to Mr. Creepy, and that's the name she had given him. And she tells me a story, and I'm just like, yeah, this is great. You know, I'd love to give him a good home at Spooked in Seattle. Now, of course, I put him on display in this, you know, antique cabinet that we had at the time. And it was one of those big cabinets that you had to pull away from the wall to get access to the doors behind it and then push it back up against the wall. So I put him on display in the case. And, of course, a few days later, I'm alone at Spooked in Seattle. I'm in the office when I heard this thud against glass. So I immediately think something happened to the gift shop. So I go out, and I'm exploring, and I can't find anything disturbed. I'm like, what the hell was that? So I'm kind of walking around to try and figure out what, you know, could have made that noise, and I'm coming around the tables, and as I'm coming around the tables, I'm now looking directly at the glass case that has all the haunted dolls. And I noticed right away that his head is turned and leaning against the glass. And so immediately I take out my cell phone and I take a picture, because that's all I had access to at the moment, because I just wanted to prove, you know, this really did happen. So I take a picture, and to my surprise, when I sat down and I looked at the picture, I noticed that the reflection of the doll was completely different. Where if you see a picture, and you can look up Mr. Creepy, you know, Spooked in Seattle, but if you ever see this doll, he's got very cartoonish features, very, you know, round cheeks, round eyes, but his reflection is not that at all. He's got these very droopy eyes, a very elongated face, more lifelike looking. And I think that that is the man that haunts this doll. And a lot of people ask, you know, why, you know, what's going on? And I think he's just looking for the female counterpart. You know, they hadn't been separated since the day they were created. And so I have been on a quest to try and find her so I can bring those two together.
So just as you were talking about seeing a picture of this, I've just posted a picture of Mr. Creepy on Paranormal Horizons. So if any of the listeners
awesome.
Want to see, it's just did it just now.
Oh, awesome. That's great.
It is a creepy looking doll, and it does look like real hair. It's not something I would have in my house. I've always hated dolls, so.
No,
you ever get haunted?
He's great. What's that?
Have you ever heard of any haunted Barbie dolls? Are Barbie dolls ever haunted? I mean, I would think that people love them for such a long time now and get attached to them and they're so popular. I wonder if that's a thing. I wonder if you could have a haunted Barbie doll.
You know, I be honest with you, I have not heard of a Barbie doll, but yeah, you're right. It is a doll that people can definitely get attached to. But it's I think people don't reflect on Barbie dolls because they're too pretty. Even though I have seen some scary ones, especially in thrift stores. Especially when these little girls get a hold of their scissors and decide to restyle their hair and redo their makeup with, you know, permanent markers. But I honestly, I have not heard of a haunted Barbie. It seems that mostly people pay attention to dolls that will give them more of that creepy vibe.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine, you know, if somebody saw a Barbie doll that was purported to be haunted, it probably just the look alone would kind of make it not feel haunted.
Right, right. But I'm not saying there easily could be one out there. I just have not come across it yet.
What about you,
Sherry? I would not have any dolls myself. I don't. Neither like vessels, you know, the vessels of souls that can depart, that can be trapped in inside the doll. I've seen a mannequin like that.
Oh, yeah. There's been stories of haunted mannequins, which is the same thing. You know, there's a theory that, you know, if it resembles the human body, then of course some spirits are drawn to that. It's almost like they're, you know, reattaching themselves to their body. And so a lot of times, you know, that's why you'll have haunted dolls and haunted mannequins as well.
I've seen the movie Chucky. No good will come of this.
Yes, in fact, they're redoing that movie as well.
And it's a movie that does not need to be redone. They need to stop rehashing all these movies. Chucky, what was the last one? Bride of Chucky or no? I think there was one after that.
Oh, you're way behind. It was like there was the Bride of Chucky, there was the Seed of Chucky, there's the Curse of Chucky. I think the Curse of Chucky is the last one that they did. Yeah, and now there's going to be a new one. Yeah.
I saw it on Netflix, and I was like, do I want to watch this? And I'm like, no. You know, the first one was good. It was a good movie, mm-hmm. but they just butchered it like every other horror movie when they start making tons of sequels.
I find that a lot of times when they do the sequels, the first one will be very terrifying. And then, of course, as they do the sequels, they get funnier and funnier. They it's like, you know, how many different ways can we kill somebody? It's like Nightmare on Elm Street was like that, you know. The first one was terrifying, and then of course the rest of them just got silly, you know, just the humorous way that you could actually kill somebody in their dreams.
A little side note: Nightmare on Elm Street. Actually, my favorite one is one of the goofy ones. It's the Nightmare on Elm Street Dream Warriors. I actually like that one.
Dream Warriors, yeah. Like that one too. And I'm not a big slasher fan, so, you know, that's one of the series actually I got a little more into because of the humorous portrayal throughout the sequels.
Mm-hmm.
So for our listeners, how was your tour of the morgue? I saw that on your page.
It was a little quiet. June has had some pretty interesting experiences in the morgue, but when we were there, we didn't have anything happen. It was kind of quiet. It was kind of funny, too, because she wanted to be alone down there, so I gave her some alone time down there. And so I went upstairs and was just sitting on the bench, you know, waiting for her to get done. And as I'm sitting on the bench, all of a sudden I start hearing somebody singing. And they're singing like these old-time songs. And I'm thinking, what the hell is that, you know? And I'm thinking, this is kind of cool. And then I started to realize, well, maybe it's, you know, somebody up in the theater, because above me is the theater as well. And there were some people up there. And so I thought, well, maybe they're just doing some practice or something like that. Well, come to find out, it was June. June was down there singing her little heart out to the ghosts.
Oh. Was there like those cabinets they put the bodies in? Do you ever like get slid into one of those? I've seen that other people do that, you know, where they lay where the corpse was.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm too claustrophobic. I think I would panic if I was in a box. I have coffins. I have old coffins, you know, from the 1800s, and I don't dare try to crawl into one of those. I even have a newer one that would be fine if people wanted to crawl into it on display, and it's just like, no, I couldn't do it. Because I know, especially with the newer ones, they lock, you know. They lock to prevent the bodies from being tampered with or coming out of the coffin. And it's like, oh, just be my luck. It would just lock, and I would just panic.
That would be terrible.
It would. So yeah, no, I've never have been brave enough to actually put myself in that situation.
What about you, Sherry? You want to get locked up in a casket or a morgue cooler or anything?
No, thank you. Somebody was posting that on the social media with these actors or actresses, like Whitney Houston's coffin was up for sale. I think Michael Jackson's was those too.
Oh, wow.
I don't like the thought of somebody been dead there and then go resell it. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. But, you know, there's all these people who got these morbid wants and needs, you know. Some of the things that they want to do on their checklist is like, yes, I would love to be buried in a coffin for a good half hour to an hour. I'm like, what? You would actually want to be buried? It's like, yeah, that'd be cool.
You know what
it
I
might
thought
sound good on
very
this.
Unusual is the old times where people would take pictures, family pictures of their deceased relatives. It's like a family photo, but one of them has been deceased.
Yep, and that's making a comeback. There
it
are
is,
some
really?
Studios. Yeah, there are some studios out
it.
There that will actually do that. There's one funeral home that will prop up the body in their favorite, you know, thing. Like, you know, if he'd like to sit in his little easy chair watching TV with a beer in his hand, they'll prop him up in a lazy chair with a beer in his hand with a TV right in front of him. And you can go pay your respects. You know, there was one guy who loved to play poker. So they dressed him up and they sat him up at a poker table and put some cards in his hand and set up the table and everybody played poker around him.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think that's
a big thing.
And it's a big thing in like Central America and Mexico. I see a lot of pictures from those areas
doing that. Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, for us, that seems so morbid, but there was a time when that was the thing to do, you know, prop up the dead and make it look as if they're still living, especially when it came to photography. Because you didn't want, when you took pictures of the dead, to make it seem like it was a missed opportunity. Because you have to understand that photography was such a rare thing and an expensive thing at the time as well, that this is probably the only photo ever taken of that person. So you created this illusion as if they were still alive, so it wasn't that missed opportunity.
And when you put it like that, I mean, that makes sense, you know, to get one last opportunity to get a picture. So now I can see it. It's still kind of weird to me, but I don't know.
Yeah, but
I can
today, you know,
it.
We probably have, you know, hundreds of, you know, I'd say thousands of photos, you know, of ourselves, you know, through modern technology. So you don't need, it's not that missed opportunity. Now it's just about reflecting on their life, you know, and enjoying what they actually did in life when they do these recreations of for their funerals. So,
well, if anybody does a recreation of me, since I love to sleep, it'd probably just be me in a coffin would be the best one, because that's what I love to do, sleep.
In a coffin?
Not in a coffin.
They could put,
but it'd be a little
they
weird
could put
to
you
have
in a bed or on the couch.
Yeah, no. Well, now I what I read somewhere that they're turning corpses into like gemstones. It's like,
yeah,
crazy.
That's a big thing. They can cremate you, and then with your carbon, they can actually compress it, which would actually create a diamond and gems and stuff like that. So that's what they do now is they can actually make gemstones out of you. They can also recycle you, and you become part of a tree. And this is one of the things I just learned, that they can actually take your ashes and tattoo you with your dead loved one. I just learned about that, and I was like, whoa, that's interesting. You get a tattoo using the ashes of your dead one. So there's all kinds of interesting things that people are doing with the remains of their loved ones.
Wow. I would never think of nor consider getting tattooed with having one of the components of the ink be the ashes. I guess it must be sanitary. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, well, I'm looking at the clock.
I could be wrong, but that's what I was reading is that some of the ink that they tattoo with it's not very good in your blood system.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I could believe that. And here I am. I got tattoos up and down my arm, so.
You and me both. And I think I have, like, this latent allergic reaction. I've had these tattoos, some of them, you know, longer than 20 years, and every once in a while they'll get raised and itchy, and I don't get it. Does that ever happen to your tattoos? It's not paranormal. It's probably, you know, allergic reaction or something.
It's just really weird. Is it like when you've been out in the sun for a while, maybe?
No, it's totally random. It happened the other day for the first time in a couple of years. I was just at work, and I'm like, that's really weird that your body would react to something that's, you know, it's been in there for decades, just randomly.
Right.
Maybe I'll get flesh-eating virus.
Now you can take the ashes of your grandmother and have her put, you know, into you.
Hey, if I'm not doing good with regular ink, I'm pretty sure if I had somebody's ashes in it, I'll probably get necrotizing fasciitis or something. But we are running out of time. So, Ross, hey, I want to thank you for coming back on tonight. It's been enlightening. It's always a pleasure. And now, if you could remind the listeners, now if anybody wants to grab a book or how can they contact you, how would they go about doing that?
Well, definitely all of my books are on Amazon. So you can definitely just look up Ross Allison, author. And, of course, you'll see the 6 books that I do have out right now, with about 3 more coming out next year. So keep an eye out for that. So definitely check out Amazon. But then, of course, if you want to follow me, just go to Facebook and type in Ross Allison Ghost Hunter. And I unfortunately have no more room for friends because Facebook is so limited on that. I've already reached my max, but definitely follow me, because I do a lot of live feeds from all the various haunted places I get to visit. So I definitely encourage people for that. And you can also see, you know, some of the adventures coming up. And then, of course, if you're in the Seattle area and you want to see some of our haunts, check out Spooked in Seattle. And that's spookedinseattle.com.
And I know, Ross, you were down in L.A. for a while, I saw.
Oh, yeah, and I'm probably going to be back down there sometime next month, I think.
Are
working
you
on some
at a radio
big projects.
Show or TV show?
I can't say, unfortunately.
Okay.
There's a project I'm working
I
on.
I you're going to say that.
There is a big project I'm working on, so I do have to keep it, you know, hush hush, especially when media is involved.
That's great. Well, good luck to you, and we'll see you maybe at the Ghost Conference. I'm going to be at the Ghost Conference this year, I think, or next year,
awesome.
I should say.
Yes, awesome. It'll be a lot of fun. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
You guys take care.
So
be
much.
Safe out there.
Okay, you too. Yeah. Thank you. We appreciate
you.
All right. Excellent guest. That's really nice. He's willing to share his experiences and his knowledge, and he's just an all-around good guy. I really appreciate him taking the time. So
Absolutely. Anyway,
thank you. Thank you, and it's a public thank you to Joe Walling. He is the founder and also paranormal investigation for PNBC and, I believe it's Paranormal the Night Stalkers. But anyway, I want to thank Joel for filling in for me last week. I appreciate it. He's awesome. He's an awesome guest. He's an awesome friend, and he's a great paranormal investigator. But I want to thank you so much for filling in for me last week.
Absolutely. It was a good show.
All right. Excellent. Hey, we're going to go and I'm not sure what the agenda is. I'm sorry, folks, but I'll keep tabs on Facebook and let you know who's going to be our next guest. I've just been really busy, and I apologize for not being on top of it. But I'm loving life and feeling very blessed, and just want to thank each and every one of you for supporting Paranormal Horizons for these last four years now? I don't know how many years we're going. I know at least 3 years for me.
Yeah, it's got to be close to 5 years. It's at least four.
Okay, cool. So, like I said before, anything that we post on Paranormal Horizons is just for entertainment purposes. It's not necessarily our thoughts, beliefs, or something that we need to stress on other people to, you know, straight their opinions, just basically for information purposes, entertainment purposes only. I'd like to have variety things to for people to read and have, you know, crack a joke or just think about it or whatever. But it's a place to share, a place to go and learn from. So
we have the best listeners in the world, and we also appreciate everybody's interaction on the Facebook page. There's been a big increase in that, so our posts are getting out there on our Facebook page. And so if anybody hasn't joined our Facebook page, check it out. It's just Paranormal Horizons on Facebook. You know, and Sherry, I was thinking the other day, you know, we got to get a website. You know, I did one for a while there.
I'm not good at that kind of stuff. I'm great at marketing, but not good at a website. So if you want to do that, I'd be happy to help you.
I can do that. We have the domain name.
My computer skills are like probably a third grader, maybe. If not, maybe second grade. But, yes, if you want to do a website, that would be great.
Yeah, I think, we own the domain name. So paranormalhorizons.com, we own it. And I need to do something with that. So in the next coming weeks, I'll try and throw something together. It's not too difficult.
Oh, that would be great. That would be wonderful. I appreciate that. And if you have any questions or anything, you can always shoot me an email or text me. So, yes, and any feedback from our listeners, go ahead and go and post it on Facebook on Paranormal Horizons. And if you want to see something or whatever, I'd like to have your valuable opinion. So that would be great, good, bad, or indifferent. We always want to improve and make it enjoyable for everybody to look at and listen.
Yes, we do. So look for that coming in the future. In the next month or so, I'll make sure I do that. It's just a time thing. We'll get that done. And that way we can have updated show schedules and all that stuff. And another avenue to communicate with Sherry and I. And it would just be good fun. But unless you have anything else, Sherry, we'll close it out.
No, and anybody wants to reach me, you can go and reach me on Facebook. My Facebook page, my professional Facebook page is, besides Paranormal Horizons, is Psychic Medium Sherry, and it's spelled Cheri. So if you like to go and like and follow me, I post a little bit here and there for, again, entertainment purposes only, but yes, I try and keep it active as much as possible in my time. But, yes, would love your feedback. And if there's anything I can do to help, just go ahead and reach out, and I can get back to you.
Very good. Well, we'll see everybody next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time, for another episode of Paranormal Horizons. And I think to close out the show this evening, we'll give a little shout-out to our friend and past guest, Bill Bean, because I have a little commercial that I formulated. So we'll do that, and hope everybody has a fantastic week. And good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Take care. Peace.
Hi, this is Bill Bean, the spiritual warrior, deliverance minister, exorcist, star of House of the Dead, author of Dark Force. For more info and updates, please visit www.billjbean.com. And if anyone out there is in need of spiritual assistance, I'll stand for you.